We,
Sonia,
and Janooni are a couple of pals studying science in undergrad. We are not professionals.
Though every episode is meticulously researched, mistakes do happen.
If you notice that anything,
and we mean anything,
we state is inaccurate, please let us know.
Your comments, suggestions, and queries are important in furthering our personal and audience's understanding of science.
Thanks for being a part of this discussion.
We appreciate you.
We really do.
Bop, bop. Beep, bada, bop.
I was gonna say, you know, red Gatorade? I think that's my favorite Gatorade.
I think so too. It is the best flavor.
Right?
A lot of people like the blue one.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. Like this? It's like you're really tasting the color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, yes, it tastes like red dye number 40. It gives you what, I don't know what the color's called, but like, you know what I mean.
Yes.
Today, everybody, is Book Day. Is it International Book Day?
I think it's a national or international. Let's see, Book Day. I don't think it's international. Oh, no, it's World Book Day.
World Book Day. Who declared it World Book Day? Like, is it some official thing or is it like Joe from Louisiana or something?
UNESCO?
Oh, UNESCO. Okay, so the big guns.
The big boys.
Yeah, the big boys said it's World Book Day.
It was first actually celebrated on April 22nd on 1995.
Wow. The more you know. And because it's World Book Day, Janooni and I were chatting, and we realized, you know what? This is the perfect day to talk about books, and more specifically, the printing press, and its affiliation to the scientific revolution, and just the topic of science in general, like talking about why the printing press and books are so important.
Nice, Sonia.
Thanks,
Gina. So why don't we start off with what the printing press is? Because I mean, like, to be honest, when Sonia first mentioned the printing press to me, I was like, what the heck is that?
You know, that's a fair thing to assume. A lot of people don't know that books, yeah, they're made. We don't write them out anymore by hand. No. They are through technology and mechanical processes. We print books on paper and ink, and then they're binded together and they're shipped off to the masses. But this whole process of mass producing books would have not been possible without the quote-unquote first main printing press that enabled mass production of books. And that is attributed to a dude named Johann Gutenberg.
I was gonna say, like, when you were saying how, like, we don't really write out books anymore, it just reminded me of, like, when I was in, like, elementary school and we had to write short stories and draw our own images on the side. Like, yeah. Imagine, like, writing novels out. Like, God, that'd be, like, that'd just be painful. Imagine reading the textbook you had today and it was, like, handwritten by someone.
God, like, imagine if it was someone with, like, my penmanship. Just looks like chicken scratch. Nobody would learn anything. I hope scribes got paid well back in the day. Actually, I don't think a lot of them did. It was like scribes were one of those jobs where you had to be literate, and not many people were literate back in the day. So, they probably weren't paid that much, like noblemen and
high
class, but they were probably paid a good chunk of money. Anyways.
Back to the printing press.
Yeah, so the creation of the printing press is attributed to Johann Gutenberg back in 1440. But even though this dude is attributed with its creation, the whole idea of the printing press actually has history and origins dating back to the 3rd century, where...
The third century,
basically monks and people, I guess, would use this woodblock technique where they would have their sheets of paper and the whatever they're trying to say inscribed, I think inscribed, when you like etch into a block or something like that,
Yeah.
Yeah. Smash it or whatever on the sheet of paper. I'm losing my words. But yeah.
On World Book Day, Sonia speaks English.
Sonia learns how to speak and read. But yeah, it has origins dating back to the 3rd century from the Tang Dynasty of China, or which is from the 6th to the 10th century as well. Mm. But the reason why we attribute its creation to Johann Gutenberg, again, is because he developed a way that would make it more efficient and more rapid, I guess. So rather than taking, I don't know, literally years to write out only a handful of books, you can make 20 or 30 in a day.
Like the Bible.
Like the Bible. Do you want to say that fun fact? Okay. Oh, well, anyways, the first book that was ever fully printed out on Johann Gutenberg's printing press was the Bible. Anyways, so now that we have a little bit about its history, before we lead into, I guess, how it sparked the whole scientific revolution, Janine, I was wondering if you could comment on a little bit of its significance.
Okay.
Not necessarily to science, but just like it's significant in, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, there was this one dude, this English philosopher. His name was Francis Bacon. I don't know, is it Bacon?
It is Bacon.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Francis Bacon.
Who basically was credited with developing the scientific method, wrote that in 1620 that the three inventions that really forever changed the world included gunpowder, nautical compass, and the printing press. Those were basically the three inventions that really changed the world, noted by Francis Bacon. But yeah, so majority of a lot of individuals throughout history basically acknowledged the impact that the printing press has had on the scientific revolution and just science communication, like, as a whole. But before we go on, I know, like, Sonia wants to mention the scientific revolution and the impact that the printing press has on it. So if you want to drop knowledge, Sonia, go ahead.
So to contextualize the history a little bit, just because we're saying 1440, it's hard to imagine what was going on around then. So allow me to drop some knowledge. So during this time, emerging from the Dark Ages was a period of time known as the Renaissance. The Renaissance literally means rebirth. And during this time, we had a lot of well-known, some of the most famous minds in history. So we had folks like Copernicus. We had Leonardo da Vinci.
He was in DiCaprio. I was like, really? He was
he's 600 years old. Not even that funny.
Not. God, can you tell I'm finally done with exams? Anyways, Leonardo da Vinci.
But then we also had a lot of famous artists like Donatello. I'm just trying to remember like every individual I can remember.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Like Michelangelo, Donatello, Raphael, like all those are
all Megan Fox.
That's so funny. But did you actually know that? Like, oh, so for those of you that didn't know, the Ninja Turtles are named after famous Italian artists and sculptors who really shaped the Renaissance. But anyways, so but just going back to what we were saying before, so emerging from the Dark Ages was the Renaissance, so which was basically a rebirth of art, culture, and science. That's what that period was known for. And connecting these periods of time was the invention of the printing press, which was literally like sort of smack dab right in the middle of it at 1440. So the what was so significant about the printing press, this ties in a little bit to what Janine's going to say in just a bit, but just to preface it slightly, the printing press was instrumental to human development in general, because it was able to produce, I'm not necessarily going to go into the science aspect right now, but what, and from a societal and cultural perspective, it was instrumental in enabling us to produce large sums of written work, which was something that wasn't, we couldn't do before. And what's specifically really interesting is because we weren't able to mass produce books and knowledge and stuff like that in the past, a lot of the times when people were spreading or disseminating information or spreading it from one person to another, it wasn't actually cited ever, because it wasn't like something that was written in concrete and stone. It just information traveled more or less from word of mouth, or it was kept within the confines of academia. So
I was gonna say, like, you know how you're like, it's not really cited, like imagine going up to someone and being like, blah blah blah, Sansanwal et al 2018 or something at the end. Anyway, sorry, you were saying
Sansanwal and colleagues. But yeah, so this ability to sort of spread mass knowledge and communication and all that kind of stuff ultimately led to the scientific enlightenment. And it was during this time, Janini, I think you have a little bit on the scientific enlightenment.
Yeah. So scientific enlightenment, also known as like the scientific revolution, basically science was largely solitary pursuit. So mathematicians and natural philosophers were separated by geography, language, and literally like handwritten publishing.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
Sorry, just the idea of natural philosophers. So back in the day, like hundreds of years ago, scientists weren't called scientists, they were called natural philosophers. So when you hear natural philosopher, it's referring to like scientists.
Fun fact, guys.
Yeah, anyway, moral and then natural, but anyway, sorry, continue.
Oh, I did not know that. Yes, okay, so like I was saying, also handwritten publishing, but not only were the handwritten copies of scientific data expensive and hard to come by, they were also like very prone to human error. I mean, as you can probably like imagine, like imagine writing all like titration numbers and fun oxygen consumption rates. I'm just thinking of everything I would have to write. That wouldn't have been like, it would have been bad. But with the newfound ability to basically publish and share scientific findings and experimental data with a wide audience, it basically allowed science to take like great leaps forward in the 16th and 17th centuries. For example, when developing his sun-centric model of the galaxy in the early 1500s, astronomer Nicolaus
Copernicus,
that guy, relied not only on his heavenly observations, but also on the printed astronomical tables of planetary movements. Another individual in history who was able to note the significance of the printing press was historian Elizabeth Eisenstein, who basically wrote her book in the 1980s about the impact of the printing press. And she acknowledged the fact that the printing press wasn't like, it was the biggest gift to science, not because of like the ability to like spread and like the speed of in which the books were printed, but rather the accuracy with which like the original data was being able to copy.
That's so interesting. I never necessarily considered it like that.
Cause like, I mean, like, yeah, like the printing press is like, it's crazy. Like the ability for it to like, okay, I have this information. I'm going to like, we can produce a bunch of like, a large amount of books. I can give it to everyone, but also the fact that like the information is accurate throughout, right? Cause sorry, if you were to have someone like rewriting the books, whatever, like it's easy to like, as I mentioned before, like human error can occur with that, right? Like the data could always be accurate and like you make an 8 to a 3 or a 4 into a 9, like that's, yeah, that can happen. But the printing press made sure like those numbers were probably accurate. And I'm like assuming that like it might seem like insignificant in the fact that like, oh, what if a 3 was an 8, but like, okay, then pi, like if we missed one number, it wouldn't be what it is today.
But just to add, that's so true. But what was I going to say? Just to add on to that, though, like a lot of what makes science, I guess, trustworthy is the fact that scientists and researchers are able to reproduce experiments and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That like that proves whatever, like it not proves, but like it supports the efficacy of whatever's being studied.
Yeah.
And before then, because a lot of it was word of mouth or it wasn't copied entirely accurately, you couldn't reproduce the methodology with like great accuracy. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah. I definitely imagine going around again saying the numbers of pi, like word of mouth through a person.
You have to remember them all. No one ever wrote them down.
You can't make a mistake.
God.
But just to add again to that a little bit, going back to what you were saying before about Copernicus, around that time too, there was a dude named Martin Luther. So not Martin Luther King, but Martin Luther. He was a theologist. And or not just with Martin Luther, like a lot of theologists, or not theologists, but like natural philosophers at the time.
So scientists
or just theorists, I guess, at the time. What was significant about Martin Luther, so his book, known as the 95 Theses, basically included, his book, the 95 Theses, was one of the first widely or best-selling books. And what was so significant about that book is that during that time, so the Renaissance, the Dark Ages, and pretty much all before then, religion and the church had such a predominant role about how knowledge was spread and who was able to control the knowledge and let it out to people. After the printing press was established, this dude Martin Luther went out and wrote this book called the 95 Theses, which basically, like, the whole book was basically pointing fingers at the church and pointing at its hypocrisy in certain aspects of how it, like, governed the land that it had control of. And it was because of this book that a lot of people realized that, like, oh, the control that the church has on the state shouldn't be as extensive as it is. And that later led to the Protestant Reformation and scientific enlightenment, where over time the church slowly, its role within society became less prevalent, and science became the more prevailing theory, I guess, that people believed. Also, I want to add one thing about the Copernicus thing that you were saying before.
Mm-hmm.
So what was so interesting about the sun-centric or heliocentric model was that before Copernicus said that the sun is the center of the solar system, people believed that the earth was the center of the solar system. And without Copernicus making his observations and doing all of his research, like, we would have never known that gravity was a thing, because a lot of the, or maybe we would have, but it would have taken far, it would have taken much longer. Like before then, people thought things fell down because the earth was the center of the solar system. So because it was the center, everything just goes to the center. That's why things fell. People didn't think it was gravity that was doing that. So until Copernicus went out and, like, spread his information and his knowledge about the way that the universe is, like, we would have not known that if books weren't being able, or if we couldn't mass produce books, and then people would have never seen that information, thought, like, maybe there's a different, like, thought experiment that we could do to see how the world works. That was my rant for the day.
Like, what's also, like, I was going to add to it, like, it's kind of really interesting to see, like, how accessible we can get information, science information today, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just, like, even things about, like, just COVID stuff, but, like, is the vaccine safe, or, like just symptoms and things like that. But it's also important, to acknowledge misinformation, like how fast that can spread too. And I just kind of like it's amazing how, like, the printing press has come so far. Like, even, like, again, with the case of the COVID-19 and, like, the vaccines, like, scientists around the world, like, were all able to share their research and come up with, like, identifying what it is, coming up with, like, restrictions and, like, potential vaccines, and, like, as, like, quickly as they did to create vaccines. Like, that's amazing, right? But we also have to acknowledge the cases where there was a lot of misinformation that's been spread during the pandemic. And that's also kind of comes with the whole greatness that is the printing press.
Yeah, that brings up the, I don't know how to explain this, but it's like a weird, not duality, but the way that we define misinformation is so different than, or miscommunication, or miscommunication and misinformation.
Yeah.
It's so different now as compared to, like, before the printing press. So before, like, if you think about it, before the printing press, you could attribute misinformation to, like, people not having access to knowledge.
Yeah.
Or, you know, people restricting knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But now, even though that's true to an extent now, mm-hmm. now it's, how do I explain this?
It's like more of the fact that like anyone can share knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's like any, like, yeah, there's like issues with access, but it's like who can share the information and the credibility behind it, right? Like there's no like certain criteria in which people can spread like information. I mean that like you can spread, yeah.
Like there's so many weird, like even mm-hmm. though like it's weird to think about, like misinformation is something that's been around forever. Mm-hmm. And even though technology is developing and it's enabling us to learn more about the world and spread more information, there's always going to be that barrier about deciphering what's true or false.
Yeah.
No matter how developed things get.
And it's interesting, like you mentioned, like how the reason behind misinformation has changed over time too, right? Like you said before, like it's access to information. Like that's how it was before. But now I guess it's like over access to information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, don't get me wrong, like the reason why the world was able to propel itself out of the dark mm-hmm. ages and move into the Renaissance and the scientific enlightenment and modern mm-hmm. science and then today is because we were able to spread information.
Yeah.
And people were able to learn, and it wasn't just restricted to the wealthy elites who had education. Anyone can learn.
It's amazing how like what it has been able to do today and like what has come to today.
Mm-hmm.
So we should also like kind of acknowledge that.
Yeah.
There's still, it's faults here and there, but you know what? Science is constantly evolving. We are constantly finding new solutions to challenges.
Yeah. And with that being said, I think that's a great way to end the episode.
Okay.
That was a very interesting conversation.
I'm glad. Well, folks at home, why don't you guys go open up a book or, you know, go study for that exam you've been procrastinating for.
Yep. Or
take a nap.
Take a nap. You know what?
Hey, you deserve it.
You deserve it. But then after that, pick up a book.
Yeah.
I should probably do that more. I'm being a little hypocritical. We could all read more.
We'll read. Everyone just, you know, even if it's a picture book.
But you know what? Okay. How about, you know, instead of pointing fingers at people for not reading, how about this? Mm-hmm. Next time you decide to look at a book.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. Don't even have to read it. Just look at it. You see a magazine. You see a pamphlet.
Mm.
Just think about like the history behind how that was able to come to you. And its influence in culture. Like,
that's amazing. No, yeah. Like my Gatorade. Like all these like nutritional facts.
The printing press.
The printing press. Thank you for telling me. There's 150 calories in this.
Not a now you're reading the whole thing like, oh damn, that's a lot of sugar.
Not a significant source of saturated fat, trans fat, cholesterol, fiber, vitamin E. I'm gonna go eat a book after this, guys, don't worry.
Okay, bye guys.
Bye bye.